Chapter 70. Mrs. Snagsby sobbing loudly. Or put it, my juvenile friends, said Chadband, stimulated by the sound, that the unnatural parents of this slumbering heathen for parents he had, my juvenile friends, beyond a doubt, after casting him forth to the wolves and the vultures, and the wild dogs and the young gazelles, and the serpents, went back to their dwellings, and at their pipes, and their pots, and their flutings and their dancings, and their malt liquors, and their butcher's meat and poultry, would that be tariff? Mrs. Snagsby replies by delivering herself a prey to spasms, not an unresisting prey, but a crying, and a tearing one, so that Cook's Court re-echoes with her shrieks. Finally, becoming cataleptic, she has to be carried up the narrow staircase like a grand piano. After unspeakable suffering, productive of the utmost consternation, she is pronounced, by expresses from the bedroom, free from pain, though much exhausted, in which state of affairs Mr. Snagsby, trampled and crushed in the piano forte removal, and extremely timid and feeble, ventures to come out from behind the door in the drawing room. All this time Joe has been standing on the spot where he woke up, ever picking his cap and putting bits of fur in his mouth. He spits them out with a remorseful air, for he feels that it is in his nature to be an unimprovable reprobate, and that it's no good his trying to keep awake, for he won't never know nothing. Though it may be, Joe, that there is a history, so interesting and affecting even to minds, as near the brutes as thine, recording deeds done on this earth for common men, that if the Chadbands, removing their own persons from the light, would but show it thee in simple reverence, would but leave it unimproved, would but regard it as being eloquent enough without their modest aid it might hold thee awake, and thou might learn from it yet. Joe never heard of any such book. Its compilers and the Reverend Chadband are all one to him, except that he knows the Reverend Chadband, and would rather run away from him for an hour than hear him talk for 5 minutes. It ain't no good my waiting here no longer, thinks Joe. Mr. Snagsby and a going, to say nothing to me tonight. And downstairs he shuffles. But downstairs is the charitable Guster, holding by the handrail of the kitchen stairs and warding off a fit, as yet doubtfully, the same having been induced by Mrs. Snagsby's screaming. She has her own supper of bread and cheese to hand to Joe, with whom she ventures to interchange a word or so for the first time. Here's something to eat, poor boy, says Guster. Thankee, Mum, says Joe. Are you hungry? Just. Says Joe. What's gone of your father and your mother, eh? Joe stops in the middle of a bite and looks petrified. For this orphan charge of the Christian saint whose shrine was a tooting has patted him on the shoulder, and it is the first time in his life that any decent hand has been so laid upon him. I never knowed nothing about him, says Joe. No more didn't I of mine, cries Guster. She is repressing symptoms favorable to the fit, when she seems to take alarm at something and vanishes down the stairs. Joe, whispers the law stationer softly as the boy lingers on the step. Here I am, Mr. Snagsby. I didn't know you were gone. There's another half crown, Joe. It was quite right of you to say nothing about the lady the other night, when we were out together. It would breed trouble. You can't be too quiet, Joe. I am fly, master. And so, good night. A ghostly shade, frilled and night-capped, follows the law stationer to the room he came from and glides higher up. And henceforth he begins, go where he will, to be attended by another shadow than his own, hardly less constant than his own, hardly less quiet than his own. And into whatsoever atmosphere of secrecy his own shadow may pass, let all concerned in the secrecy beware. For the watchful Mrs. Snagsby is there to bone of his bone, flesh of his flesh, shadow of his shadow. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.